Welcome back to Beyond the Headlight, everyone. It is an extra, extra special day for me to have you on the show with us because we're here with Deb Kuchala, the Senior Vice President of Digital Programming and Video at Food Network and the Cooking Channel. Prior to joining the Scripps family nearly a decade ago, where she's also worked for platforms like HGTV and the Travel Channel, Deb served as Editor-in-Chief for Everyday Food at Martha Stewart, as well as an Executive Editor. Deb, many of my best memories have been shared watching Food Network and the Cooking Channel and then racing to make the recipes with my mom. So it's really just an incredible privilege for me to chat with you today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. We love when people have stories of cooking our recipes successfully and having a good time with their family doing it.
You're a huge part of our family, that's for sure. And you and I have a really fun chat planned for today, walking through your journey and all the experiences you've had in this incredible food and digital world that you've really been quite the pioneer of. But before we dive into your work at Food Network and the Cooking Channel, I'd love to start at the very beginning because I think it's incredibly moving that your dad, despite not loving his work, really encouraged you to find what you love, which is how you ended up here. How did you get exposed to the food and lifestyle world after working at the New Republic and then Newsweek? You know, what got you excited about it?
Well, I started out in news, and I started out in news because my dad, who really did loathe his work, was very much a fan of reading the Hartford Courant every day. And as a small child, when I first started to read, and now I understand as a parent, he was just trying to get an excuse so he could read it as well. He would have me read the front page of the Hartford Courant and look for errors. And if I found any errors, he would, I don't know, praise me or whatever, but it was this father-daughter thing. And by the time I was in high school, I really wanted to go into journalism, and I worked at the campus newspaper, and then I went to Maryland to study journalism. Was very lucky to come out of there planning to be a political reporter or writer, and landed at the New Republic and worked there for several years, where I really learned the art of argument and the art of persuasion through essays and all of the really brilliant minds who contributed there. I was editing copy, and I really wanted to learn as I went, and I did. I found myself looking at the back of the book, so all of the entertainment coverage in a very high-minded way. It was all music and film and art. And I hadn't been exposed as much as I would have liked to the arts as a child. So I really learned while I was up in New Republic about pop culture and really how it infused people's regular lives, their everyday lives. So I had met my fiancé at the time. He got a job in New York. This is such a non-empowering story of following your man to another city. So I moved to New York, and we got married. I was working at Newsweek, and there's a point in my saying, you know, in my telling my engagement story. When we got to New York, we were newly married, and what I realized was all that time I had spent working at the New Republic and going through journalism school, I never really learned how to fold a fitted sheet. I never learned how to cook a lasagna. There I was with my new husband working at Newsweek, spending my time trying to find recipes for what we could cook together on the weekend, what we might enjoy together during the week. And I realized that I wanted to do more of that. I felt like I hadn't explored as a younger person what it would be like to have a yard, what it would be like to do crafts. All of a sudden, real life got really sexy compared to news. So I got the opportunity to freelance with Martha Stewart, and very quickly I realized that I wanted to flip the switch and that I wanted to freelance at Newsweek and have that be part-time, but really focus on lifestyle. So it was a hotbed of experimental creatives. Working for Martha was unbelievably formative for me because she was an expert and surrounded herself with experts who made everyday living a little bit more special. so I worked on all kinds of content and became one of the editors who focused on food and spent a lot of time in the test kitchen and really represented the home audience, the home cook who hadn't gone to culinary school, who might have a question and be afraid to ask it because they didn't want to seem silly. And so I would ask questions on their behalf and help the chefs and experts there, and this translates over to Food Network as well, to consider how to make it more accessible to home cooks. And over the years, I had an excellent journey with Martha. I had all kinds of different roles there, I think partially because I was open-minded, and as things changed, I learned that raising your hand and saying, I'm game to help, is a really good approach. And so I got different opportunities. And then I ended up having three kids while I was there. And while I was on maternity leave with my third son, there was this thing called Twitter. So this is about, 11 years ago, 10 years ago, and it had been around for a bit. But while I was on maternity leave, I found myself looking at my phone and looking at Twitter while I was watching TV, and it struck me that two screens at once felt pretty efficient. And so when I got back, I talked to Martha and the team about social media, and I was very enthusiastic about jumping in. Sometimes I get a little over-enthusiastic, and I think that they were intrigued but didn't feel the urgency at the time that I did personally. And so I explored some opportunities, and I was so, so lucky to come over to Food Network to work on their digital sites. So that's how I got here.
It makes me chuckle to hear you say over-enthusiastic, because I feel like that's the reaction that I have when I'm also doing the two-screen action, when I'm seeing a recipe that I want to make on TV, and then I'm like jumping up and running to the kitchen with my phone so I can actually go make it. So I'm totally with you on that front. And I think it's really incredible, Deb, that, you know, that long ago, I don't think it was as clear to all of us, at least, that food and digital would have such a beautiful marriage. It's almost kind of shocking now when you think of how the two intersect, that it wasn't always like this, because it's made our lives in the kitchen and at home so much easier and more connected. What kind of gave you that inkling so early?
Well, I wish I could say I looked into a crystal ball or something, but I think it was the dovetailing of what the marketplace looked like, but also where I was in my life stage. I was a working mom who was very busy in an intense atmosphere, and I needed to keep up with what was going on in food magazines in particular, but also what Food Network was doing while I was at Martha. And I think that I needed solutions professionally, but also personally, that allowed for me to enjoy the little bits of time that I had, to maximize my time in the kitchen, but still feel like the food I was making was something I could be proud of. And frankly, because we had so much going on with too many children, I wanted to spend time with my friends. And the only way to do that with small children, I found, was to invite people over for dinner. So I think my personal experience and my professional experience kind of synced up at the right time, where digital was so pervasive, and I was coming at digital looking at news content, but also looking at lifestyle content, and really Martha had a digital presence, and seeing that there was something both useful and inspiring about food in all of its forms, no matter whether I was at the store or at home with the TV on or reading something. It felt like food was always, it was part of our everyday life, and it seemed like something that I could use to make my real life better, but also, as I learned, it seemed like things that were very commonsensical to me, because I had learned them and I had spent so much time in the kitchen and working with professionals, things that seemed commonsensical to me, people would be impressed with, or people would say, how did you do that? And it seemed like a good moment to pull back and say, how can not only recipes be shared and not only videos be shared, but, you know, what is the tip? What's that thing that as you're at a wedding and you're talking about the wedding cake and how good it was, is there that little tidbit of cocktail party chatter or tips or flavor descriptions, something around that food that feels like it's interesting to talk about? And really, in small ways, how can you share the knowledge that you get? Some of the best recipes, some of the best videos that we've done, some of the most interesting content isn't coming out of a professional restaurant kitchen. It's coming from fans who, you know, who compliment something and then suggest ways of making a particular food their own. So I think that it's the fact that food is part of pop culture and the zeitgeist, put it in all of the different forms of media on every screen, and I think allowed a window into professional chefs' worlds, and restaurants certainly are an area of access. And then as the grocery store industry changed and ingredients were more accessible, and then digital food delivery became a thing, all of those things contribute to food being accessible and easy for a lot of us, fortunately. And it gives us a window into saving time and how we get particular ingredients, but then allows us to spend a little bit more time being creative. And I think that's one of the things that the lifestyle experts and digital talent that we work with and try to cultivate really bring to life. They all have different points of view from a culinary perspective, but they're reaching different audiences and sharing how their particular origin story with food might have an application to somebody who's watching their short form series or somebody who's looking at one of their recipes. When there's so much food out there and food content, it's really important to not only have the how to do it, but why you might want to relative to other content that's available.
I love the way that you articulate that, because I've seen it so much in my own life. I was sharing with you before that although I have a lot of allergies, so I have to make a lot of substitutions, it was watching a single Ina Garten show and running to get the recipe online that turned me into like an amateur baker at home, and it's become a huge passion for me. And your team's work empowering us to put our own spin on it not only gives us a sense of joy in the kitchen, but it allows us to then share that with the people that we care about. And it has this incredible ripple effect.
I love the phrase ripple effect, because I think that even if you go back pre-digital media, people always shared recipes. They would pass recipe cards after going to somebody's house for dinner and saying, oh my gosh, I really love that. Where'd you get the recipe? Can you copy it down for me? Which now seems like the dark ages, but I think the caring enough to share something helps influence how that spreads. And the fact that you're talking about Ina and her chocolate cake and how you created something that was all your own from it is one of the things that our brand across platforms, and in particular on digital, I think really celebrates. It's not just the right way, the perfect way, this is the way, but all of our talent have their own approach, and we encourage home cooks to look at those and decide, like, I'm an Ina cook, or I'm a Guy cook, or I'm, you know, I really love Jada, or, oh my God, that James Brashione on, you know, on foodnetwork.com is a, you know, a chef, and he's teaching me, and I really like his style, but when I make it, I want to do this or that, and then I'm going to make sure that next time I make it, I'm going to do it the way I did because I was empowered to do so.
And then you see, and this has been such an your team has done just a great job with this. You see those creations end up on the TV shows and end up online, and then other people start to make them. And I think that sense of community has been so exciting to see, because it feels almost like we're all sitting around a collective dinner table and sharing those recipes. Like you were saying, you've afforded us all an incredible platform for that. Discussing the talent and the great individuals that you're working with, I was really curious, when you're thinking for TV shows or you're thinking for creating online content and online shows, you know, how do you know that someone's going to be great at connecting with the audience? Because I feel like in our house, you know, Ina and Jada and Bobby, they're on a first name basis with us. We reference them in the kitchen all the time. It's like we're all buds.
Right, right. I do think I think that when you're talking about any of those, you can name them in one name, chefs, you're talking about a level of culinary expertise and passion and years of cultivating talent and work on their part. That's a little bit different than looking at the potential of somebody who's an up-and-comer. I wish I had the formula for discovering talent. That's going to be the biggest next thing. And I also get asked all the time, how do you make a viral video? There's not an easy answer to either of those, but I think there are certain characteristics that I really look for in working with talent, as I look at their social platforms and from a numbers perspective, look at, you know, how they're engaging with their audience, how they have a point of view that's very clear, how they're adding to the conversation, what's a little bit different about them, whether or not, I think to your point about this collective table, whether or not I feel I would want to have dinner with this person. Do you want to have a beer with them? Do you want to sit down and have breakfast with this woman? She seems really interesting. What's her story? Why is she doing what she's doing? Why is he traveling to that place in the South? You know, where's his family from? What did his mom make when she was growing up? Once you start looking at somebody as potential talent and you want to know more about them and you would like to break bread with them or learn from them, there's kind of the first step, which is to say, you know, we date a little bit. We say we're going to try a couple of things out. We're going to pilot some short form, or we're going to have you up to the kitchen, or we're going to commission some recipes. We're basically going to talk with each other and decide, is there some chemistry here? Is there an audience that we're trying to reach that you're going to be exciting for? I think that more tactically, it's important for people who are trying to break in, and this is true, I think, you know, regardless of the industry, you have to be enthusiastic. You have to show a passion. You can't want to be a star or successful for stardom or success's sake. You have to want to embrace the work that goes along with it and the journey. And I think when you're looking at how a talent connects with their audience through their written word and through how they connect with the camera and how they engage with their audience, you can get a sense of how authentic they are. How polished they are. In some cases, being too polished isn't quite right. And in some cases, people need a little bit of grooming. And I think one of the exciting things, both with talent within our teams, but also with talent that we're working on for in front of the camera on digital, you know, some of it is taking chances on people and saying, you have a little bit of a spark, you have a point of view, you have something to add to the conversation, and you have some expertise. Once you add up those things, then we can work together. And I think the real key is not injecting what I expect of somebody into their point of view. They have to have a point of view that adds to our conversation, because nobody wants to hear more of what I want. I mean, I'm one representative of one demographic in one region of the country, and we're a brand that serves people across the country who like all different kinds of food. We're the kind of brand that is equally excited about tacos as well as, you know, a six-course prefix menu somewhere in Manhattan. We go high, low all the time on our different platforms. But regardless, we have people who are passionate and people who are expert and curious.
I love that you bring up curiosity and enthusiasm, and it makes me think of one of your newest shows with Molly Yeh, who recently started Girl Meets Farm on Food Network. And I think, you know, for people who have followed Molly on her blog over the years, she is incredibly enthusiastic, and she's given us all a look into a life that's very different than many of us live with her baking and her meals. How do you see, Deb, the intersection of these incredible bloggers and the platforms that they're building coming together with the work that you're doing? Do you see them as the next roster of Food Network and Cooking Channel talent and contributors?
I love Molly, first of all. I am such a fangirl with her because she's exactly the kind of person, regardless of whether I'm watching one of her videos on our site or her show, or just looking at her Twitter feed or Instagram feed, I want to hang out with her. She's engaging and charming and smart and has these little bits of wisdom that you wouldn't necessarily expect from somebody who is not, you know, she's not 50 years old. She, you know, the life experience that she has is a rich but very different and I think really compelling. When you look at our roster of talent within digital, we look for folks who are bloggers, certainly as one consideration. And I think that, you know, Molly is a good example, just like Ree Drummond is, of somebody who has a very engaged, smart, fun audience who they're looking for Molly and Ree across screens. And I think that that's been a very good, interesting match for our brands. I think that overall, it's important across our digital platforms to make sure that we not only have folks who have TV as a goal in their life plan, but also folks who are digital natives who really want to make sure that their brand and their point of view and their cookies are having life across digital platforms for digital sake. I think years ago, you know, when you asked a little bit ago about looking around the corner and seeing what's coming next, I think it's been fascinating that for a long time, people would look at digital for any brand and say, that's an on-ramp to TV, and the goal would be to land on TV someday. I think that there's still a lot of that, but I think now what you see is a lot of folks who are on TV, who want to make sure that they're expanding their digital experience and their digital reach, not because of the business necessarily, although that's certainly important, but because they want to have a direct conversation with their fans, and doing so in digital is easier. I think that the talent that you see on TV might show up on digital, and we certainly are always looking at new points of view in digital that might have a life there. But it's much more of an ecosystem than it used to be. It's not a one-way street. I think that the discussions and our considerations are much more holistic. So we're looking at all of the ways a particular story can be told. And that's true of talent, but it's also true of particular cuisines and foods and restaurants and all of the other facets of the food media world that are additive to all of the familiar faces that you like.
I think ecosystem is absolutely the best word to not only describe your work, but so many of the industries that are now kind of shifting and merging to become not purely digitally enabled, but having that full spectrum so they can meet people where they are. And I think one of the incredible things your team has done is become a companion to wherever we are in our real lives. And I'm so glad that you brought up Ree because I totally want to go to the lodge. And I think it's just such a great example of someone that you want to sit down with and kind of thinking about the home life that she's portrayed. My mom and I love her kitchen. I want to shift gears to what I was actually most excited to chat with you about today. I love how you share that people, their food, and their homes have always been really interesting to you, because I've always loved, like, when you're on your way to the airport really early in the morning and you can see people's lights on and they're in their kitchen. I love, like, peeking in and wondering what they're doing, what are they having for breakfast, like, what's their whole life story. What have you learned about how people spend their time at home and in their kitchens?
Well, I think I love that that voyeuristic piece of food as well. Peeking in, I think, is a really nice way of thinking about some of the stories we tell. You really want a glimpse of the food that people are eating, the conversation that they're having while they're eating it, what they're planning on, what their travel might look like, what their, you know, closets might look like because they're getting organized and it's a really busy spring weekend. People don't live in verticals. So as much as we talk about food, your interest is also in what the kitchen looks like, what their, you know, what flowers they might have on the table, how you make that food into an experience. And I think, you know, food is very complicated for some people, and I think it brings joy to a ton of people. There's associations between the seasons and time shifting and particular produce being wonderful at a particular time of year. And then, like you were saying, having memories of cooking with your mom or your grandmother or, you know, my cooking with my fiance at the time, and building those memories and experiences that then become stories that are inspiring to others. You know, we're in a very technically driven, you know, all screen all the time kind of place with society, and having some, I guess, unplugged time. I mean, I always like to have Food Network on in the kitchen while I'm cooking, but I think that time in the kitchen and time at the dinner table with your family is a good, actually specifically sitting at the table, I tell my kids, you know, there's no screen. And then every so often they'll be like, Mom, you have your phone, put it down. Having an unplugged moment in your day when there is so much happening and just connecting with each other while you're having, you know, some burgers or you made chicken or whatever for dinner, I think is even more important than it's been in the past. And so when as much as technology has made food easier for people to enjoy because it's accessible and everything's on demand, I think that there's also a new respect for quality and taking a little bit of time and taking a deep breath and enjoying both the food that you're making or the food that you're serving your friends or the food that you're ordering in even, and enjoying each other as well.
I completely agree with that and just the whole concept, especially today, of savoring those moments. You know, in your role, I'm sure you've heard so many stories of how people have taken your recipes and had that great dinner, or maybe it led to a proposal. I know Ina has a chicken that seems to lead to quite a lot of proposals. What are some of the best stories, Deb, or, you know, special rituals that people have shared with you over the years that they have in their homes?
Wow, rituals is a big word. I think that I tend to get a lot of fun stories. I wish I had a marriage in my pocket, but I think that the thing that has come up so many times, very frequently, is Chopped. The Chopped basket is endless fodder for families. You know, there's this wonderful concept of watching something together that everybody enjoys, and time and time again, I hear of friends and family and people while I'm on the road who say, oh my gosh, we did a chop challenge, or we did it as a bake sale at my school. We've done a chop challenge digitally, and it's reached a lot of folks. I think it's this idea of mad science. You know, like I can take three things that are super familiar and add in a couple of curveballs, and I'm going to be as good as a competitor on that TV show. And I wonder what would happen if I put red onions in it. You know, Scott's going to hate it. Or maybe I should make French toast. What am I going to do about the ice cream machine? Those things have become part of the culture. And part of why they're so pervasive is the popularity of the show. But it's also, it's this very connectable kind of food where you see the pressure of time, a little bit of creativity, and then a little bit of suspense to see who's going to win what. And having all of that as you're watching something with your kids and then turning around and saying, we can do that too, is the thing that comes up most often. I think that, you know, Alex Guarnaschelli as a chop judge has, you know, she's got her game face and she's super tough, and yet she is such a teddy bear of a human being. She's lovely and genius in her culinary craft. And one of the things we've been able to do is shed Alex in a little bit of a different light. We've done a series with her for digital called Fix Me a Plate, where she matches up with a chef, you know, who specializes in pizza, you know, or whatever kind of food. And she talks to them very soulfully and interestingly about why they do what they do. And I think seeing this other side of her is one of the virtues of what we do. We have a little bit of space in between those episodes to carry the narrative and keep the story going, and also show some of these talent in unexpected ways, so that when somebody says to me, oh my gosh, that Alex Guarnaschelli is so tough, like I would never want to cook for her, that must be so scary, to be able to say, yeah, I wouldn't want to cook for her necessarily, but she would be awesome to sit down and have a donut with at the donut pub, because she talks to the chef in this way that brings to life food. It's so joyful to be able to bring stories about food and cooking and restaurants to life, no matter what platform you're on, and knowing that we're creating content for Facebook that's short form, for Snapchat that's super lively, for Instagram we're seeing stories that are really fun and engaging with a different audience, super visually driven, and obviously foodnetwork.com is this huge, huge brand that has so many fans who want to cook, but they also want to lean back and watch a little bit and learn and be inspired, so that the next time they go to the store, they might cook something new.
I love the way that you articulated that last part of the watching, because it kind of shows, like, in my house, how different we are cooking. So I am very, like, once I've got the recipe, I will weigh it gram by gram. Yeah. There is no improvising. I don't talk to people when I'm baking. Like, right. I take it very seriously. And my brother and my mom, they're the total opposite. They'll watch something.
Are they just throwing things in left and right?
Yes, I can't be in the kitchen with my mom when she bakes, because it causes me too much anxiety.
It's really exactly some of what we've been talking about. People have all their own approaches, and I think one of the things that's beautiful about the Food Network family is that whether you're the person who's very precise and scientific and methodical in your cooking, or you're just going to kind of wing it and throw this, you know, this spice in, and why don't we try it with that? There's something for you. And creatively, it's really lovely to be able to say, what are we going to do next? What are we going to do different? How are we going to make that cook at home who's super anal happy, and at the same time make sure that we're spontaneous enough to give our fans some surprises?
They give me many surprises just in my own kitchen. And we've talked about all of our kitchens, Deb. What is life like in your kitchen? What are some of your favorite memories?
It's funny. I talked about my dad at the beginning of our conversation. My dad loved to randomly cook. He loved burnt toast, and he would ask for it as charred as it could be. But he liked to make whoopie pies. My extended family is from Maine, and when we moved to Connecticut from Maine, one of the things we brought with was this whoopie pie recipe. And being a kid and cooking with my dad while my mom was at work was this unconventional, you know, thing at the time. And yet my fondest memories are of spreading the, you know, the cream between the two chocolate cakes and then having to wait a little bit before we could enjoy them. And so I think that, you know, I had these memories of his cooking and or baking and my doing that with him. And then, you know, to your point about different styles, I was one of six kids, and my mom had to be very regimented as to what dinner might look like throughout the course of the week. So I also learned this level of predictability and efficiency and embracing particular home recipes over and over. My mom makes this this macaroni dish that's just ground beef and macaroni and onions, super, super cheap. But all of us in the family, when we go home, we still say decades later, "Mom, can you make that macaroni?" And we call it your macaroni. And macaroni doesn't have any meaning for Canadian French people, but to her, it's something that, you know, helped our family get around the table. We all ate the same thing, and we all have really fond memories of it. And I think what I'm trying to do in my everyday life with my three sons, my husband, is to have a little bit of that so that, you know, down the road, my oldest, who's going to be going off to college soon, will say, "Mom, when I come home, I'm going to bake that banana bread," because he loves baking banana bread. You know, it's become a little bit of a ritual. And if I'm able to bring that to the people I work with and they're able to bring their stories like that to me, I feel like the food on our plate is so much more exciting and fun, and it allows us to reach new ideas and really delicious foods pretty easily.
I love the way you bring up the name of the macaroni and the ritual of having it and asking your mom for her macaroni, because I have found in my own kind of cooking adventures and at home with my family, when you name a recipe, like a personal name, it brings so much joy and so much nostalgia when you're eating it. I miscalculated the amount of honey that I put into something, and I am, when my mom hears this, she might argue with if I say I'm a dramatic baker, because I get very stressed out if something goes wrong. There's been moments of falling on the floor, but I told you I'm serious about the measurements, but I thought I miscalculated the amount of
honey.
Sugar.
Have fun with it.
I thought I miscalculated the amount of sugar that I put into it. So I ended up making a cake after, and I called it Redemption. And oddly enough, that kind of made me think that, like, every day you have a new opportunity to start over again. So people should name their recipe. Like, there's a lot in that.
I like that. And I do think that looking, and one of the things that's a hallmark of what we do is being very positive. And the reality is, it's not that serious. You know, you want your recipes to work. You want to make sure that you're eating well and that you're enjoying yourself. But when you make one of those so-called mistakes, some of the best things you've ever eaten have been born out of that honey instead of sugar. So I think, you know, allowing yourself to say, like, "Wait, that was really good. That wasn't a mistake. I want to do that again," is the kind of thing that we love to hear from our fans.
I am on a life journey to be able to follow, and I have become over the years, mostly because of watching all of your great content, a lot more relaxed in the kitchen. I'm proud to say falling on the floor has not happened in a couple of years. Before we go today, Deb, one of my absolute favorite things that you shared, and I could talk to you forever, so I'm very sad that we have to close up here. I hope we could schedule another interview, maybe live in the test kitchen, and we could sample things. But you were saying that it's so important to not forget to ask the chef or the talent or the restaurateur that you're working with what they want to add to a story before it's complete, because that often ends up being the best part of the interview. Before we go, can you tell us some of the best stories or recipes or accounts that you've heard just as a result of asking that question?
Sure. I do think that, you know, that's like a tactic from my reporting days. You always just say, do you have anything else? Is there anything else you want to mention? When we were first talking to Lazarus Lynch, who's one of our lifestyle experts, he's known as Son of a Southern Chef on Instagram. We created this show with him called Comfort Nation. And we had been talking to him for a bit. He's this great story of somebody whose his dad was a chef, and he went to a high school in New York called Food and Finance High School, where they specialize in students, or they work with students who want to work in culinary or hospitality. So he ended up being an extern in the Food Network kitchen, and then he came back to us a few years later, and had been blogging and had been, you know, doing some stuff on Instagram and wanted to do something with us. And at first blush, I thought that he didn't quite have the experience that we needed for him to have, and this was a few years ago, in order for him to be authoritative. And so we were going back and forth about how-tos and recipe development and the kinds of recipes he might want to do. And I said, you know, well, what else? You know, what else would, you know, what else are you passionate about? Or are you excited about? And he said, you know, I really think that when you talk about comfort food and you talk about Southern tradition, there's a dialogue that could happen that's not happening right now. And I'm really fascinated by how comfort food is interpreted in all these different ways by different chefs. And it started this dialogue that we had with our producers, and we talked to him, and I'm so glad that I had that conversation, because where it landed was this awesome series where he's out and about talking to purveyors and chefs and folks across the country about their heritage and what comfort food means to them. And, you know, I love me some mac and cheese, and that's what I think of when you say comfort food, and maybe some ice cream or something. But there's a lot of heritage tied to comfort food, and where you are regionally and who you're with and where your background is from and what you love to eat all influences how you define comfort food. If I hadn't asked him what else, he might have left and, you know, gotten onto a list of, you know, somebody that we should watch. Maybe we'll do a few recipes with him. But in the meantime, we were able to really hone that idea. And we decided that along the way, you know, he's cooking, he's got his own brand, he does a lot of exciting things that are really helpful for us to see out in the industry. He's on trend, he's very exciting and personable. So we were able to watch him develop in terms of his culinary skills, and we were able to bring to life stories of people and food in a way that went far beyond social video and hands and pans videos that are just how to cook. This is a little bit more of why. And I think always having open-ended questions and open minds when you're talking to people about their ideas, to say, like, well, you know, if you were making the decision, what would you want to do? Because when somebody does something that they love, you can hear it in their voice, and it brings a particular story to life.
I absolutely love, and I'm so grateful that we're able to close with that, because I think that it kind of encapsulates everything that you've been sharing today. And I hope that people listening in will kind of take your lead and ask someone when they're having a conversation, you know, what else or what does this mean to you? Because when you get those backstories about why something, doesn't have to be food, it could be anything, is really significant. Yep. to someone, it adds so much to the story, and I think that's what makes it special. I'm so grateful, Deb, that we got to spend time together today. It really was a dream come true to me. Your team plays such an integral role in my childhood and my life today. And before we go, I wanted to highlight, you know, one of the things that I admire so much about you is the honor and responsibility that you bring to your work and how much you want those stories to be told. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for sharing it with us. For everyone listening in today, what's the best way for them to stay up to date with you and also stay up to date with all of the incredible and delicious and family gathering work that your team is doing?
Wow. First of all, thank you so much. This has been such a delightful conversation. It's really exciting when others are excited about what we're doing. And it's a good reminder of what good fortune we have. You know, we're doing really fun work that's important in its own way. For fans of Food Network, obviously the TV schedule is on foodnetwork.com, but you can just turn on that TV. Foodnetwork.com has all of our seasonal events, all of our information and extensions for shows, and most excitingly, you can find all of our short form video on our website, but also on our social platforms. I think that if you follow us on Instagram and Snapchat and YouTube, and you check out our Facebook pages, you'll find all kinds of excellent ideas for cooking, for going out to eat, and meeting new faces for the Food Network family that you might want to sit down and have a slice of chocolate cake with. I hope to be there with you.
We all hope to be there with you, and I'm so excited for us to get together again soon. Thank you so much, Deb, not only for being here today, but also for welcoming us to the Food Network family and to your table, and also encouraging all of us to open up our own tables and do more with our families.
Thank you.